For more information about Ancient Dragon Zen Gate and Tygon's teaching, please visit us at ancientdragon.org.
Good morning and welcome. I'm very happy to be able to introduce my old friend Kaz Tanahashi. We had a wonderful calligraphy workshop here that he led yesterday. A number of his calligraphy and paintings are hanging around the temple in the back and the front of the zendo. Kaz and I are old friends, and the occasion for his talking today is the wonderful new translation of the entire Shobogenzo. Dogen, the 13th century founder of Soto Zen, one of his great masterworks, that Kaz finally has completed. He's been working on for how many lifetimes? I don't know. Anyway, so Kaz will be talking about Dogen and his relationship to Dogen, and I'm honored to have been part of that project along with a number of other people, a couple dozen or so, a few dozen other people. So Kaz will talk about Dogen and Shobogenzo, and thank you very much for coming to Chicago, Kaz.
It's wonderful to be here, enjoying your practice. Thank you, Tygon, for your invitation and introduction. Tygon and Shohaku created this monumental book called Dogen's Extensive Record, such a huge work, and that is one of the major works of Dogen. It's a collection of formal talks, some informal talks, a lot of poems, monastic regulations, and all that. And then the other main work of Dogen is Shobogenzo. We translate as Treasury of the True Dharma. It's more like a collection of essays, short essays by Dogen. So these two major works kind of have been done, and this is a kind of a monument to the collection of different pieces from different texts, including some from Shobogenzo, and then this new book is the entire collection of Shobogenzo, 96 fascicles. We use this word fascicle, which is a chapter-length text, kind of bound independently. So you could say volume, but a volume sort of suggests it's a big volume. So usually we call it fascicle, 95 fascicle version is common, but there's another one collected in a different version of handwritten copies. So altogether 96. First I'd like to talk a little bit about who Dogen is. Dogen, the 13th century monk born in Japan and then trained as a monk in Japan, but was not satisfied with the teachings that was going on in Japan, so made a great effort to go to China. He actually went to China with his teacher, Myozen, and then looked for a genuine teacher. Meanwhile, Myozen died in China, so Dogen found his teacher, Ujin, then studied Zen teaching and brought back to Zen teaching. One of the earliest Zen teachers in Japan, but maybe he was the first one who kind of taught just Zen, genuine Zen. And he didn't regard his teaching as Zen or any school. And he called his teaching the Buddha Way. And when he was alive, it was all right. His community was so small, so in a way obscure in the countryside. But later, his disciples have to identify his school. And the Buddha Way was too general. So they call it Soto school, after his Dogen's teacher Ujin's kind of lineage, Chaldong lineage. Chinese sound is Chaldong, but Japanese sound is Soto. I think you know, my life consists of a series of accidents. So one of the accidents, I was in the beginning painter. I was looking for spiritual guidance for my my life in art, and that was a time in 1950s. Everyone went to existentialism. So I was also kind of studying existentialism. I loved Albert Camus' Stranger. And then I kind of realized that to be a good artist in existentialism, you have to be in deep despair or fully bored. So I was not really kind of qualified. So I started looking around elsewhere. And then I found Dogen's poem. And I didn't really understand it, but I was very attracted. So I did, I was doing calligraphy and painting. So I did the kind of first big piece, kind of two panels of calligraphy of Dogen's poem. I did it in a kind of wild style. I had no idea who Dogen was, so I thought he must be wild. So let me... later we translated it, this poem, and put it in this book, One in a Dewdrop. So I like to read it for you. It's called Snow. All my life, false and real, right and wrong, tangled, playing with the moon, ridiculing wind, listening to birds, many years wasted, seeing the mountain covered with snow. This winter I suddenly realized snow makes a mountain. Actually, snow is a mountain, is better, isn't it? With a translator.
Either way.
Kind of feel. But snow is a mountain. Mm. Interesting. And actually, my painting is called Snow Within, is here. And I feel that snow is Zendo. And then I started reading Dogen's essays, Shogo Genzo. And again, you know, it's just Dogen is so difficult and hard to grasp its true meaning. But I was so attracted with this kind of vast field of mystery, some kind of so much power, also kind of amazing positivity. I like to read this passage from a passage called Zenki. And we translate it as undivided activity. By the way, a journalist friend, a Japanese friend of mine, wrote to me and he said, "Oh, I bought your new book. I think your book is really suited for a weight for pickle making." This is the first volume. Here, he talks about birth and death. And then in the Buddhist teaching, birth, you know, our life, we experience each moment we are born and we die many times. So usually life is regarded as birth. So you can sort of convert it and think about it, life, you know, when he says birth. Birth is just like riding in a boat. You raise the sails and you steer. Although you maneuver the sail and the pole, the boat gives you a ride. And without the boat, you couldn't ride. But you ride in the boat, and your riding makes the boat what it is. Investigate a moment such as this. At just such a moment, there is nothing but the world of the boat. The sky, the water, the shore are all the boat's world, which is not the same as the world that is not the boat's. Thus, you make birth what it is. You make birth your life. So, for an artist, you know, you make your art and make it art, and you make your life your life. So you are fully responsible for your life. And that was very attractive to me. When I was 27 years old in 1960, I had my first show. So in Japan, usually you rent a gallery for 6 days. So the seventh day, you take down your show and then someone else hangs the artwork. I noticed that, the artist will be always present because it's such a short time. And I noticed an old man would come every day to my show. And he was like 65. I'm now 77, so... but that time, he looked so archaic. We became a friend, and he said he was a Zen priest, and he had a temple, but also he had an institute called Zen Culture Institute. And then he was publishing a magazine called Zen Culture, quarterly magazine. And surprisingly, he said he wanted to feature my paintings on his magazine. And I had no Buddhist or Zen background. I would go to churches, Christian churches, study English in the Bible school, led by an American missionary lady. So I was surprised. But anyway, I agreed, and then I would often visit his temple. And the one time I said, his name is Soichi Nakamura. Nakamura Roshi, it'll be a great help if you would translate Shobo Genzo into modern Japanese. I've read one time that there are only 3 people in Japan who understand Shobo Genzo. You must be one. So, great, it's Dogen is great, but it's impossible to understand him by reading the medieval Japanese and Chinese he was writing. So he said, yeah, I will, if you help me. So I said, okay, I'll help you. And then we started working. I thought maybe I could help him for a few years and do something more interesting. But now I'm still doing it after 50 years. Maybe I couldn't find anything more interesting. It was so difficult. We would meet, one afternoon in his temple. We started with Genjo Koi. And then each line, it took a whole afternoon. Just one line. And then I realized that I need to really study Chinese, Buddhist philosophy, Sanskrit, and so forth. So meanwhile, we are translating. I was kind of a beginning student of a Buddhist text and philosophy. So we were just struggling. And then in 1964, so after four years later, I was invited by a friend in Washington, D.C. to have a show there, so I brought some paintings. But I first landed in Honolulu, became friend with Bob Aitken, and then he suggested that I would go and see Shunryu Suzuki Sensei that time, in Reverend Suzuki. So I visited Sokoji, and he served me tea, and then we had a nice conversation. But he had no idea who what I was. So finally he said, are you a salesman of Buddhist goods? I have my tie on.
Yes, yes, he is.
So I said, no, I'm a student of Dogen Zenji. I'm translating Shobu Genzo with my teacher. And then we talked about something, and then I said, okay, so I know that you teach Zazen, but what kind of text do you teach? And he said, Bluku Feikon, kind of Chinese collection of koans. So I said, why not Dogen? And he said, Dogen is too difficult for American people. It's impossible. So I said, when you are teaching foreign students, don't you think you should present your best? It doesn't matter if they understand or not. And then there was a kind of dead silence. I thought he was upset. Maybe, you know, I was afraid. And he said, I'm supposed to give a talk to my students next Sunday. Would you talk about Dogen for me? So I said, yeah, sure. But I don't have a book. But he said, I have a book. So that was kind of my first kind of public talk in English. So I had to kind of study and write down. And I guess maybe I read my talk. I talked about Dogen's concept of time, as opposed to American concept of time is money. And Suzuki Roshi said, well, thank you, it was pretty good. But you should not read your talk. It's okay to make a mistake, but just talk. It was a good teaching. I thought he didn't know so much about Dogen. His kind of book of Shobu Genzo was brand new. But later I was told that Kishizawa Roshi, kind of the utmost expert of Shobu Genzo and Zen teacher of the time, 1940s, and earlier, moved to Suzuki Roshi's sub-temple to be an abbot, Kishizawa Ian Roshi, to train Suzuki Roshi. So actually Suzuki Roshi had a profound understanding of Dogen's teaching. I felt he was so generous. You know, I was just a kid, you know, 29 years old, and he asked me to kind of give a talk, you know, on Dogen. So since then I went back a year later, 1965, and met with Suzuki Roshi again. And then went back to Honolulu, had a show there, and then translated Genjo Koan first with Bob Aitken. He was not Roshi at the time. And then that translation was used by Suzuki Roshi later. He put some notes and print out as kind of a material for his teaching. I went back to Japan, and then translation became suddenly so easy. I think, you know, when we are translating text into another language, you have to deconstruct the syntax and, you know, and terms and so forth, and then find the best kind of expression that is sort of compatible in the new language, the other language. I sort of figure out the secret of translation is deconstruction, and find the best expression that is kind of most suited to the readers. So the translating medieval Japanese text into modern Japanese became so easy. So I said to Nakamura Roshi, you don't have to do anything. I'll do the first draft. I'll kind of dictate, and then we'll kind of form a kind of team of volunteers to transcribe. And then you check, I said to my teacher. And so we did that. And then everything became so easy. And we published modern Japanese translation, the first one, first complete translation of Shogo Genzo into modern Japanese by the end of the 1960s in 4 volumes and 1 dictionary. Now we have maybe 7 or 8 complete translations, better translations. But ours was the first one, and it was such a kind of struggle. And then I thought, well, I'd like to translate Shogo Genzo into modern Japanese, but not in my study and with some maybe American friend, but maybe I should really study with Zen practitioners, serious Zen practitioners. I was not a serious Zen. I was more like a scholar, and then I loved kind of words and texts and then thoughts and so forth. So I was, you know, I was so interested in what Dogen would say, not necessarily what he would tell us to do or what he was doing. Maybe if I would translate with serious centered practitioners, that would be really good. So Suzuki Roshi had passed away, so I wrote to Richard Baker Roshi, abbot of San Francisco Zen Center, successor of Suzuki Roshi. And eventually, I met with Baker Roshi and Webb Anderson in Kyoto. It was 1975. And then they invited me to work for San Francisco Zen Center as a scholar in residence. So from 1977, well, that is when I moved to San Francisco from Japan and started working with Webb and Ed and Blanche and many people and translating Dogen. So until last year, for 33 years, San Francisco Zen Center supported the project, providing wonderful Zen practitioners, teachers, and writers, like Taigen is one of them, and also provided funding for 33 years. That has made it possible to have this publication. I'm infinitely grateful for the generosity of all people, staff, and members, and abbots of San Francisco Zen Center, and all my collaborators, more than 30 collaborators. When Bob Aitken and I translated Genjo Koan, there was only one English book on Dogen, Reho Masunaga's Soto Approach to Zen, a small book that had translation of Genjo Koan too. So now, Taigen has been our scholarly editor, along with co-translator. But so I asked Taigen to make a bibliography. So one section is about Dogen. Or by Dogen, you know, book that has Dogen in the title, subtitle or main title. So we have more than 50 kind of books in English that has to do with Dogen. Of course, many more books that have reference to Dogen or based on Dogen, but. In these 45 years, since 1965, I first translated Dogen into English, there has been so much expansion of the readership. That means people who have been practicing or interested in Zen, so many people, I mean, all of you were included. And I think it's just an accident, you know. I just fell in love with one writer, one poet, one Zen teacher. But somehow, this has sort of many people maybe felt the same way I felt, kind of falling in love with Dogen. So this is a story of Dogen in the Western world as well. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Cuz. I want to add a little bit, and then we'll have time for discussion and questions and. So first, just I feel so grateful to have had the chance to translate work on Dogen with Kaz and with Shohaku Okamura. This book of Shobo Genzo that Kaz has translated that came out last year, it's really an important event in the history of American Buddhism, not just Zen. It's really, I don't know if any of you will ever read all the way through it. but you can open it up in different places. And just to say something about, as Kaz has said, about his appreciation of Dogen, I fell in love with Dogen also, and have been working in various ways on writing about and translating Dogen. There's something about his writing that's very deep. It's hard to understand. It's impossible to understand sometimes. But it's also very poetic. And there's something about it that's very, to me, very consoling and comforting at the same time that it's challenging. So it's very vital. And, you know, each little bit of Dogen you can go back to again and again and again and sit with and see more about it. So translating Dogen is a great art. I remember Kaz telling me once, though, that a Japanese friend said that Dogen is better in English translation than in Japanese. So maybe, I don't know. I work with dictionaries and can read a little bit, but I can't really say. But just to say a little bit about an appreciation of Kaz, and he's told you his life work of Dogen. I started studying with Kaz, I think maybe 1979. Some of you have been to San Francisco Zen Center and know the little study room outside the bookstore in the basement of San Francisco Zen Center. It's a small room, less than a quarter of the size of this room. And I remember taking a class there on Japanese poetry with Kaz, and that's what started me translating. I had studied Japanese a little bit in college, but we translated together poems by Ryokan, the great 19th century Soto Zen monk and poet, and Kaz has a book coming out next year of translations of Ryokan. I'm very glad that you're here and that we have a chance to talk with Kaz. To use this opportunity to encourage you all to look at Dogen. And Moon in a Dewdrop is one of the best introductions, and Kaz told me this weekend he's coming out with it next year with a Dogen study? Dogen Reader, which will be not quite as heavy a weight as the full Shobogenzo. So Kaz has provided Moon in a Dewdrop, Enlightenment Unfolds,
Beyond Thinking,
yes. And I helped with all of them. And so there's an opportunity to try and tackle Dogen and read a little bit. And don't worry about understanding him, but see how he fits with your sitting. Sit with Dogen. So there's so much more to say about Kaz, who's a wonderful artist and calligrapher and peace activist as well. But I want to just give time. We'll have time afterwards for informal discussion if you want to talk individually with Kaz. But does anyone have comments or questions or responses for Kaz now? Douglas.
So who was Dogen writing Shobogenzo for? I mean, we know, for example, that A. Koroku is Dharma talks and poems that were addressed to the monks. Did he distribute these essays to the monks, or did he read them to the monks? And who was his audience?
Many of them, he delivered his talk to his community of practitioners in his monasteries. Some of them were only written, and we don't know, but some of them were given to his students. And then his students sometimes especially during the construction period of the Daibutsu Monastery, which became Eihei Monastery, a lot of lay people were kind of working for construction. So these people were also the audience. So sometimes he talked about, well, his tone encouraging people to do to construct stupas or copying sutras and so forth, were more like directed to lay people. But most of them were kind of addressed to monastic practitioners.
You've talked about the process of making translations. I wonder if you could say anything about reading translations. I've, for example, noticed, I mean, I haven't done this in depth, but for example, looking at Genjo Kon and your first translation and your what's appeared here, they're different, and you know, there have been changes over the years, apparently, in your understanding. And sometimes when I read translations, particularly texts like that that we encounter again and again, I wind up feeling sort of uneasy, because the there's sometimes such a wide variety in which in the way different translators have handled certain passages. And so I'm just sort of wondering if you could sort of make recommendations for somebody who, like most of us, who were very much at the dependent on translations.
I think you know, there is no complete translation. Translation is always partial, and also depends upon kind of understandings and interpretations and expression of the translators. So, yeah, Genjo Kon is a good example. There are many translations, and then they are kind of vastly different from one another. So it's in a way, it's good to kind of compare different translations, but it'll be also good to kind of judge that which translation suits you best.
So you mentioned how when you created your painting of Dogen's poem, it was wild. But maybe you didn't know Dogen very well then. Would you say you have a sense of what he was like, and or something like that? Can you talk about him?
I think he certainly he has some kind of wild aspect, his poetry and so forth. And then his thinking is so kind of so wild in a way. But on the other hand, his kind of he dedicated much of his time in writing monastic guidelines. So Taigen and Shohaku also have independent book about Dogen's pure monastic guidelines. So he was maybe very precise in doing things, and he expected his students to be kind of precise and then sort of work closely with others. So his life seems to be very much kind of regulated time-wise and form, very formal. And then maybe the irony is, when your life is so simple in a way, you don't have to think about which restaurants to go or which movies to to see. So you just sit in the same place in the same way, same time of the day, and maybe kind of the poetry and then all this great thinking and all these wild expressions kind of flourish in a way.
Jeff?
You read the poem that introduced you to the Dogen. Over all the years of reading and translating and understanding, is there any one thing in particular that has touched you that stands out above all else that would be a favorite or just really made an impression?
I think, I didn't know when, kind of, when I first kind of got involved with Dogen, but now I think we have to sort of, when we present a book, we have to say why Dogen, you know, why Dogen is important and so on. And I feel he was one of the greatest illustrators of meditation throughout all spiritual traditions, not only Buddhism. But so, you know, in whatever way you like to meditate, I think Dogen can be a good place to go and then and study to make our meditation not just kind of limited to our body and mind and, you know, projects and family affairs, but kind of, the field of meditation becomes so vast and so, in a way, colorful and joyful, encompassing all phenomena. I think that way Dogen can be very helpful. And Peter Levitt, my kind of associate editor, said, okay, he counted the words in this. He said we have 500,000 words. Is that right? Yeah, not letters. 5,000. And 500,000. Yeah. Half a million. How do you describe Dogen's thinking or teaching in one word? That's kind of tough. And I would say non-separation. So if you don't separate time and existence, kind of, they should be together. That's kind of like contemporary physics, right? If you don't separate maybe time and then the self, and if you don't separate the self and then others, people in the future, well, people in so-called on the other side, you know, the enemies, so-called, then we really become concerned with peace and peace with the environment and the environment for the future. So Peter Levitt said intimacy. Intimacy is not only just being close, but also to be fully together with something. So yourself, to be fully together with yourself, or in each moment, you know, intimacy, I think. Good one. You might say something in one word. How do you describe Dogen in one word?
Should I say it again?
What is Dogen's teaching in one word?
I think non-separation is great. Mm-hmm. Intimacy is great.
Mm-hmm.
I can't do it in one word, but well, beyond is a word he likes to use a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Going beyond.
Mm-hmm.
And that means deep and wide and vast, and at the same time, personal.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like I have a personal relationship with Dogen from struggling to translate him. And I think just struggling to read and feel what he's telling us, as Kaz said, about our meditation and our life, that's a good way to try and be with Dogen. And don't worry about some understanding of it. That's not the point. That's much more than one word. So we will have time for informal talk discussion with Kaz. But does anyone I'll have a last one more comment or question for now?
We have something for you. It's 10 laws of on the art of joyful living, and 7 laws of de-aging, and somewhere there's a handout.
Yeah, there may not be one for everybody, but they're right out front here on the table. And so Kaz yesterday at the calligraphy workshop and was telling me he's developing a project of de-aging. So for many of us, this is a useful tool. And de-aging and aging is one of the laws, is that de-aging and aging happen at the same time. But Kaz teaches about how to enjoy our life, and this is also the heart of Dogen. So.
The best way to de-age is to go to our ancient teacher, so you can de-age by 700 years.